Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and the show, Blueprint for Wealth, is sponsored by Zell Law. We're an estate and business planning law firm located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all around the country. If you'd like to know more about Zell Law, we invite you to visit our website at www.zelllaw.com. And on the website, there are videos, there are past articles and publications that we've written for the Washington Business Journal and other places, and lots of content on estate and business planning topics. Also, if you'd like to make an appointment, give us a call at 571-203-9355, and we'll be happy to have you come in and visit with one of us to talk about your estate and business planning needs. Today, we're going to be talking about reasonable compensation. That is, what is reasonable from the Internal Revenue Service's perspective for a corporation to pay its owners, who might be also employees? Under the Internal Revenue Code, a corporation is allowed to deduct its reasonable share of salaries and other compensation for personal services that are actually rendered. The key phrase there is reasonable, and the other key phrase is personal services that are actually rendered. So be careful in situations where you have family members working for you through your business and you're trying to pay them a salary. Is it deductible? As long as it's deductible, you'll get a tax benefit for it. If compensation or fees for services that are paid to shareholders or employees are found to exceed a reasonable amount, the company cannot deduct the excess, and the effect would be for it to be taxed potentially at corporate rates of 35% plus the state rate. So the negative or the downside to losing that tax deduction is pretty darn significant. Courts look at this issue, and they've looked at it for decades in many, many cases, and they examine the cases on a facts and circumstances basis. What that means is they look at each case, and there may be certain factors that are important in making the determination as to whether or not compensation is reasonable, but the whole idea of determining whether or not salary or compensation is reasonable really depends on your individual case. If it's not allowed as a deduction, it could be recharacterized by the courts as a disguised distribution to the shareholder, which might be treated as a dividend. And of course, dividends are not deductible to the corporation, yet the shareholders have to pay ordinary income tax on it. Now, today's dividend rates are not that bad. The highest federal tax rate on dividends that are qualified dividends is 15%. But that's scheduled to expire at the end of 2010, and that rate may go as high as 39.6%, depending on what Congress does. Also, if the amount is received by the shareholder employee, it's taken out as compensation, and then it's paid over, actually, to a child of the shareholder employee. Is it treated as a gift by the shareholder employee? Well, gifts are not taxable to the recipient for income tax purposes, but it could have adverse gift tax consequences. So the disallowance of salaries and compensation and bonuses to a corporation that are paid to its shareholders, to its employees and their family members could have a very negative effect. Now, I mentioned a few seconds ago about these factors that the courts look to in determining whether or not the compensation that's being paid is reasonable. Well, first and foremost, what are the employee's qualifications? Now, you can imagine paying a salary or a bonus or some type of compensation to your three-year-old son because there may be some tax benefit to that. You might not be able to shift it to a lower tax bracket, but you might be able to set aside the money, say, into an IRA for his benefit. But can a three-year-old actually render services for a business? I guess it depends on the business. You also look at the nature and the extent and the scope of the employee's work. I've seen people structure these arrangements where no matter how old the individual is or how disengaged the person is from the business, they continue to receive compensation from the company. And again, are they actually rendering services? And are they really being paid fairly for the work that they're performing? Another factor the courts look to is the size and complexity of the business. If it's a smaller business, there may be a little bit more flexibility in structuring the compensation arrangements versus a much larger business with many employees. You also look to compare salaries that are paid with the gross income and the net income of the business to its employee owners of the business. Also, what are the prevailing economic conditions if there's a downturn in the economy and the owner-employee is taking out even more bonuses and compensation than they did when the business was doing well or when the climate was better? Is it fair and is it reasonable? They'll also look to compare salaries with the amount that is actually being distributed as dividends to stockholders. And then finally, the courts are generally going to look to compare the compensation that's being paid to the executives in this business versus comparable concerns. And what is comparable? It should be comparable in terms of size. The business should be of the same size. So, you know, if you have 20 or 30 employees in the business, that might be relevant to compare to another company of the same size, as opposed to a 1,000 employee business. And then you're also going to look to compare the salaries that are being paid to the owner employees for purposes of determining reasonableness to companies that are in the same industry. For example, if the company is in the business of building software and they're paying the owner employees a certain amount, is it fair to compare that business to a business that is performing professional services? Not always. In fact, it may be very, very different in the way they compensate executives and employees. A good example of this reasonable compensation analysis is in a recent case that was decided by the United States Tax Court called Multipack Corporation. It's a very recently decided case, in fact, just this month. In that case, all of the closely held corporation's 2002 compensation payments were deemed to be reasonable by the court. And that is a very important decision because there was a significant amount of compensation paid. We're going to talk about that. But in 2003, when the economy turned down and the business wasn't doing quite as well, the court disallowed about 38% of the payments as being unreasonable, and therefore they disallowed a deduction to the corporation for about 38% of the amounts that were paid out to the owner employee as compensation. So the impact was significant, not only to the corporation because it had to pay income tax, but to the owner employee as well. The court focused on five factors that, in this case, were applied typically in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals way out in California. And these five factors include the employee's role in the company, the comparison between this company and other companies that are similarly situated, the character and the condition of the company, in other words, how is the company doing in this economic environment, and potential conflicts of interest. In other words, did a relationship exist between the company and the employee that might permit non-deductible distributions to be recharacterized or disguised as compensation? And lastly, the fifth factor is, what is their consistency in applying compensation strategies from year to year? Are they internally consistent? So the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals looks at this and they say, well, would a hypothetical independent investor be willing to compensate the employee as he was actually paid? In other words, they sort of bring in this imaginary person from the outside and apply the five-factor test to determine whether some reasonable investor would pay this guy as much as he was paid. In the Multipack case, the sole owner, who was also an employee, took the corporation over in 1972 when it was about to go bankrupt. He turned it around and made it really successful. He was the president, he was the CEO, and the chief operating officer, and he controlled all aspects of the operations of the company. So for 30 years, he had been running the company when the IRS finally attacked some of the compensation payments that were made to him. In 2002 and 2003, the assets were about the same, between $3.1 and $3.3 million. But revenues dropped from about $9.5 million in 2002 down to about $8.8 million in 2003, and what was fairly profitable in 2002 became a loss in 2003, and these were important factors to the court. So in 2002, the corporation paid the owner-employee about $2 million in compensation, mostly in a bonus. In 2003, they paid him about $2.1 million, slightly more than they paid him in 2002, when the company was actually doing better, and I think that was an important factor. The company consulted with its CPA, and they asked whether or not the compensation should be treated as reasonable comp, and the CPA said yes, based on everything that the CPA knew. The tax court applied these five factors that I just talked about, and they basically allowed all $2 million as a deduction to the employee owner, saying that it was reasonable and fully deductible in 2002. But because the company generated a big loss in 2003 and had a drop in sales, this hypothetical independent investor from the outside would have expected a lower rate of compensation to the owner-employee for the company's chief executive, who was the driving force behind the business. Consequently, the court determined that only $1.3 million out of the $2.1 million in comp was deductible, which meant that the remaining $800,000 was subject to income tax at corporate rates and then treated as a dividend, again taxed to the shareholder, double taxed. So be careful when you're structuring your compensation arrangements. If you've got any questions about how to structure compensation so that it passes muster under the reasonable compensation test imposed by the Internal Revenue Service, give us a call at 571-203-9355. That's 571-203-9355, and we'll be happy to help you. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth. And right after these messages, we'll have another very special guest, so stay tuned.